Hello, this is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is a renowned children's author and illustrator, best known for creating the Charlie and Lola books, which have gone on to become a BBC animated series. A previous children's laureate, she was UNESCO's Artist for Peace in 2008 and was awarded an MBE for services to literature in 2010. Her latest book, The Goodie, explores the importance of kindness and freedom. Lauren, we're here in your beautiful studio in Primrose Hill. Just describe to me a little bit where we're sitting.
Well, it's a room which is sort of lined with shelves of all different shapes and sizes, I guess, because I like to look at things while I'm working. And so some of the shelves have got books on, but some of them have got objects. So I always like to break up. I just didn't want to have lots and lots of bookshelves. I wanted to have all kinds of things that I collect. And everything is sort of here for a reason, because I find all the things feed into my work in some way or another, and it's not always obvious why.
It's a very eclectic collection, a little like your professional life. I mean, right at the beginning, it seemed that you had no idea what you really wanted to do. There were so many things you could do. You didn't, in fact, even know what you were called.
I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And so although from being a very small child, I'd always loved to draw and make things. So when I got to the age of 18, I knew that whatever job I did needed to involve drawing and making and painting. But that didn't make it really obvious what I should study. And I sort of chose illustration as a default, and because it seemed that it had a direction to it. And I was a bit worried about doing fine art, which my father was very keen for me to do, because I felt you have to have an awful lot of self-confidence and drive to get up in the morning and, without a commission, keep yourself motivated. And I didn't think I had that in me. Mm. So illustration seemed like it was part commercial, and it's quite collaborative in a way. So that seemed like the thing I should do. And then I went off to study illustration, and I really hated it. And I applied for everything: fine art, textiles, architecture. And the only course I didn't get into was the illustration course. It was really funny. So I ended up studying something called decorative arts, which is a sort of making and quite practical course. Artistic, but it's learning practical skills. But even that, but by the time I came out of college, I had no idea what I wanted to do.
During this time, was that when you wrote Clarice Bean?
It was after that. I'd had a funny early experience with trying to write a book with a friend when I think we were 18. And so I'd stayed on for an extra term at school studying art. And so I took the rest of the year with my friend, and we wrote a book and illustrated a book. And we actually did send it off to a publisher who remarkably was really interested. And we had this lunch with her in London, and we were terribly excited. And it was like, you know, we just couldn't believe it. We were being taken out for a business lunch, and we were just these teenagers. And she said to us, oh yes, if you would make these changes, then we will publish. And we never did, because all we wanted was the lunch, really. it was that really, it's this sort of youthful excitement about someone taking you seriously, someone being interested. And so it was almost as if we thought, oh, well, that's good. Someone is interested in what we're doing. And sort of shelving it, saving it for later. Maybe, you know, maybe we'll come back to it. Then, of course, a few years later, I thought, well, I really would like to have a go at writing something. And then nobody was interested. And I would, it was in the days you could go and make appointments, you know, cold call. And I did, I went to New York and I cold called, you know, publishers and saw them, but nobody was interested. And meanwhile, I was doing other things as well. But it was just a very funny time. And then finally, I think I wrote Clarice Bean something like in 94, 95. And again, I went to New York with it and tried to sell it to, I think, Viking Books. And they said, no, it's too English. And then I came back to England and showed it to Puffin and they said, no, it's too American. and then it was Suzanne Carnell at Kingfisher Books who was really interested, and she was really important at that time because she could see something in it that she liked, and she encouraged me to sort of make a few changes to it, which was really, really valuable. And but then she couldn't publish it until they got a co-edition in the States and no one wanted it. So it just was dormant for 5 years, really. And that's when I started doing my lampshade business with this friend of mine.
Well, let's talk about that, because we're sitting here and there's a lovely little lampshade here and you made it yourself.
Well, yes, we designed them all ourselves. So we would kind of make these, we'd do these little wire sculptures of shapes that we liked. And I think we had about five different shapes of lampshades that we thought would be nice, because we didn't want to do just the ones which are drum ones, which I don't know why, because it would have been so much easier to do that. But we decided we wanted to do the ones that were those kind of fluted shapes and interesting shapes, and then they're all sewn on, all the things. So we found we made little prototypes, and we found a factory that made them in Suffolk, handmade by this really nice woman who I remember very, very well. And so she handmade them all, and we would buy fabrics in Wembley and Southall, and we used lots of sari fabrics and things. And it was a really, really interesting thing to do, but impossible to turn a profit. We just couldn't do it.
Meanwhile, Clarice Bean is still out there. You're hoping to sell it. And just back to that character and your characters in generally. I know that a lot of them are often, they're 7 years old. They're little girls, quite often blonde. And I wonder how much of that has to do with your own childhood. What was your childhood like?
Well, there are elements in Clarice Bean in the first picture book. There are things that are autobiographical. The feeling of the sort of chaos in the house. It's not that I only had two siblings, and she has three, and she has a grandfather living with her. That probably the having the grandfather there, it, I suppose, represents something from my childhood, in that we were very close with our older relatives. I always liked them, particularly the great aunts and uncles and the grandparents. They were very interesting. And I liked that sort of family holiday chaos when you were with your cousins and people. I really liked that. And then my parents were very sort of sociable. So there were always people. You come downstairs and there'd always be people you didn't recognise in the kitchen. So there's a bit of that in the book that you see. But I think I always say about Clarice Bean that she's sort of, perhaps she thinks the same way as me, but I'm not as brave as her. I always felt like she would always say what she thinks, and I'm probably thinking it and not saying it. And so I think I'm just writing a new Clarice Bean at the moment. I haven't written one for a long time. And there's something really cathartic about writing Clarice, because I can say all things I want to say, but it's through her. And I've gone back to her being younger. She got to about 11 and now she's gone back down to being about 8. But yes, there is that. Charlie and Lola are not, they're about an idealised, in a way, 70s childhood. where there are those aspects of what you remember as being the good things. But it's very, I always think it's about the right 15 minutes of your day. It's the good bit where children talk together and play together without any sort of adult interference. And I always think that's quite magical, that time that children spend together. And it's a world you can't step into. Once you're out of childhood, you will never go back. So there's something slightly mournful about it too.
Your most recent book is called The Goodie, and it's wonderful. I'm tempted to call it a morality tale, and I wonder if you feel the need in all of your books to put some kind of lesson in and to try and, I don't know, tell children to be good or to be themselves at any rate, which is what this is about.
It's exactly the opposite. I don't like morality tales, and I don't believe in telling anyone else what they should think. And so I suppose I feel it's about putting down something for you that means something for you. So whatever I'm writing, I feel I'm writing it for myself first. And then if I'm very lucky, it will connect to other people and it will mean something to them. But what it means to them is sort of none of my business. Mm-hmm. It's up to them to take what they need to take from it. And I suppose it's the thing I love about story generally, whether it's film, television, theatre or book, or even music, is that people, they take what they want to take from it and they see it in the way that they, either they need to see it, or perhaps it's just at that point in your life you see it that way, and you can return to something 20 years later and you see something completely different. Mm. And I think with this book, I wanted to write something about the way that we will insist on labelling each other. And we do it very particularly to children. But I think we carry on doing that through life. And we do it to ourselves as well. And I hear myself describing myself to people and saying, oh no, I'm not very good at that, or I'm this kind of person. And I think how strange that we do that. And how life limiting it can be, not life shortening, but it can be very constricting. Mm-hmm. And I worry about it particularly so now because of social media. I think we do it to each other much more. We're much more likely to jump in on people if they say something and just make a decision about what they've said or what they look like, a piece of work that they've done, anything. And I think that's to be regretted, because we don't have the same conversations with each other, perhaps. Or we don't allow people to sort of evolve or change or make mistakes and grow and see a different point of view. And so I suppose with this story, I was really looking at the way that a child, in this case, he's called the goodie because he seems to be doing constantly the right thing. But is that goodness? You know, it's great. There are things, certain things you need to do sometimes when you're asked to do them, whether you're an adult or a child. And yes, but that's about doing the right thing at the right time. Is it about goodness? I don't think so. And so I really think that there's a page in this where you see him comforting his rabbit in a rainstorm, because he knows somewhere inside him that needs to be done, because the animal's distressed. And I sort of think that's really what real goodness is. It's about noticing, it's about feeling something for somebody else and doing something that perhaps doesn't make you necessarily that comfortable at the time, but you will do it for them. Yeah. And I wanted to do that in a really tongue-in-cheek way. So it's not meant to be a morality tale. So he's very sort of confined by this label that he's been given by his parents as the goodie, and they expect him to be good. And so there's no reward in anything for him either, because he's no longer seen. He's just, this is your role, you are good. But it's also not so great for his sister, who's always known as the not goody, and so she loses out on many things. So what she gains for not having to eat broccoli and things she doesn't want to eat, she loses in terms of, you know, how people then see her. So she's not allowed to go to any children's parties because they know that she's going to behave badly. But she behaves badly because everyone expects her to behave badly. And so it is meant to be funny. It's not meant to be preachy. But it was really me sort of just looking at what you win and lose through these labels. And actually, can't we be more than these things? And so even when people ask me to describe, what do you do? Well, one of the things I do is illustrate, and one is write. But there are plenty of other things that I do and want to do. And I don't want to be sort of told, yeah, this is who, yeah, you are.
I wonder, though, about this sense of responsibility, because, of course, you are absolutely worshipped by a lot of children. And you were Children's Laureate. And with that, I suppose, comes some sort of job to guide children?
I suppose. I think when I was doing the laureate thing, because that's a specific role and it is a job, I very much feel it's a job, then there is a responsibility. You're taking on something, you're asked to do certain things and you're asked to think about certain things. And I found that very interesting. But I think when I'm making my work, I don't feel that responsibility in the same way, because it's different. It's I'm really talking to my reader, whether adult or child, as me, and this is what I'm thinking about right now. These are my thoughts. What do you think about it?
Yeah.
And I think it's for them to take that. I certainly think, for me personally, one of the things I always want to give a reader is a certain amount of hope that I don't, you know, it can be funny, just it doesn't have to, that everything ends well. I have written stories where things, you know, someone gets eaten at the end. But I quite like that, you know, and children have always really enjoyed that. We all enjoy reading, you know, have enjoyed reading fairy tales or thrillers or whatever. And I've written my own thriller series. And I think, you know, that can also be very nourishing. Yeah. But I do always, I don't know, I suppose it doesn't have to be everybody feels like this, but I suppose I quite like that idea that there is, it's always hopeful. There's something in it that's hopeful.
The books are very filmic, almost like they're written as a storyboard. Did you have that in mind? Because, of course, you've gone on to have fantastic television success with them.
With Clarice Bean, which is the very first book, so that's the one I wrote in sort of 94, 95, and came out in 99. That really did start as a film. I'd always been passionate about cinema. And it was at the time of writing that book that I was thinking of perhaps applying to film school and studying prop making or animation or something. I was really thinking about it, but I felt like I was such a late starter compared to everybody else. So I'd already chopped and changed once, and I just thought, I've got to get on with something. So I decided to write my own film. And then as I was writing it, I wasn't sure if it might be an adult novel. And so if you read some versions, they read very differently. So they're much grittier. And then I was doing the pictures and the words together when I was thinking of it as a film. And then I showed it to somebody. It was somebody I didn't know, who was very grown up and had companies, and, you know, she was, I didn't know her at all. I sent my portfolio to her because someone had said, send it to her because she gave you some good advice. And I was just up for anybody tell me anything, I don't mind. And I think maybe because she was a complete stranger and had been very successful in her life, I listened to her and she said, I just think you could do this as a, you know, a picture book. I think it would work. And she put me in touch with Helen Nichols, who you know, with Meghan Morgan and all those amazing things. And she was incredibly kind to me and put me in touch with people. I mean, it was still turned down, but I think it was, that's why I went that way. I think I was very keen to go make it film, which is why there's so many characters and so many scenes, because I kept drawing things. And then when I wrote my sort of crime series for teenagers, that is also written like a film, because I love film and I loved Hitchcock, and I was thinking a lot about why his films work so well. And I think it's because he understands that need for pacing, which I think sometimes we forget. We've become very old, people can't focus unless there's lots and lots of action, and that's what they want. They want the thrills and the action, but you don't feel the thrills if there isn't any quiet moments, if there isn't the humour and the domestic comedy in there, or the you've got to feel what the protagonist is going to lose. And when I watch a film like North by Northwest, I'm always thinking, oh, but you were going to be going out for dinner with your mother, you know, half an hour ago, and now look at you. And it makes me think about, you know, what the character's going through. And I read a lot of Elmore Leonard as well, and he's brilliant at doing that. And there are certain crime writers who I just think they really understand that need to get to know your character. Mm. So I think when I was a child, I used to love James Bond. Now I just find it very boring, because I don't know anything about him. And when I watch a Tarantino film, certainly one of the early ones, I get to know all the characters. So you see who they all are and how they were going to relate to each other. And then it becomes interesting.
What about when you're illustrating for characters that you don't know or that you haven't created yourself? So, for instance, you illustrated Pippi Longstocking. Mm.
That was one of the first jobs, actually. When I really got going, I think it probably is almost the first job that I did for somebody else. I did do a couple earlier than that, but it was really before I started doing my own thing. So, Pippi, I'd always said no to illustrating other people's work. And it's not because I didn't want to. I felt I couldn't, because I need to spend so much time with the character, and people don't give you that time. They sort of say, we've got a book from so-and-so, would you like to illustrate it? It has to be done by September. Like, well, it will, apart from the work I already have lined up, it will also take me a year to think about the book and the character. I want to spend a lot of time in that world, so I understand it, and then I know what I'm going to do. With Pippi, it wasn't a problem, because I knew her since I was 8. Mm. And so it felt almost like my book, because that's what happens when you're a child. It becomes yours, like The Secret Garden was mine already. So when they said, would you like to do that? Yes, I can do that. And Mary Poppins was the same. So it was easy. In terms of, I know it.
Yeah.
I now feel like, yes, I would like to illustrate for other people, particularly because my daughter's still quite young, and illustrating is a lot more friendly than writing, because you can be present for someone. I find I can be present for her while I'm drawing. It uses a different part of my brain. When I'm writing, I just can't hear anything. I don't want anyone interrupting me. I can't read anything, because it contaminates. Whereas when I'm drawing, I can talk to people. I just find it friendlier. So I'd love to do more illustrating. Yeah.
Just looking around this really beautiful room, I see that there are some sketches that are the beginnings of your line for Liberty.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So working with Liberty, that was a very lovely thing, because I'd always loved their fabrics since childhood, because my mother used to make our dresses. So I used to go there sometimes, and you'd sit there looking through all the patterns and then looking at all the fabrics. And I use pattern a lot in my work. So when they were doing they do these sort of themed collections, and I think there was one around storytelling. So they'd asked lots of different illustrators to create fabric, and so I'd done that, and I love working with that. And I did something with trees, and then I took parts of their original pattern. So I drew these trees, and then I took little tiny elements from their archive, and they've got this incredible archive. And so I think I took some flowers and things from something that was 100 years old, and then you can sort of, I decorated the trees with all these patterns. And then they asked me again when they did there was an anniversary for Alice in Wonderland, and I created another thing with the meadows, because there's the thing where they're sort of rowing through the water meadows or something like that, and so I created fabric for them.
So beautiful. The goodie is all about Churton, and it's just beautifully, beautifully done. And just to read it aloud is such a pleasure. I was reading it to myself earlier, and it's just this, you want to put so much into it, and it, and I can imagine as a parent reading to a child, it must be tremendous fun. But it's also written in a way that children obviously will be able to do it for themselves. What's next?
Oh, well, next is a Clarice Bean. So it's going back, I can't remember when I wrote the last one, but probably around 2004, I think. And so yes, I'm going backwards. And it's about Christmas, because I suppose it's all about family. I started writing something a few months ago, and it was so dark. And I was thinking, no, this is not what people need right now.
Because of COVID?
Yeah, I think it was combined with lots of things that are going on at the moment. And I also spent quite a lot of time, or do spend quite a lot of time, talking to children when you do festivals or go to school visits. And I remember years ago asking them what their biggest fear was, because for me, when I was growing up, it was nuclear war. That was the big worry. And I remember how it sort of took over. And so all those years ago, I wrote a book called What Planet Are You From? Clarice Bean, because they said the environment. And that's all that those years ago. You know, it's almost 20 years ago they said that to me. And now you just see what a big thing it is for them. And I just think I wanted to write something. It's still got her sort of contemplative, philosophical look at things. But I thought, actually, this isn't the time to go dark. This is the time to show something light and hopeful. So it's a lot about family and community and friends and people. So it's a lot to do with that. So that's the future. And it's going to be very, very... It's a sort of very, very illustrated novel, so it'll probably have a picture on every page. So I don't know what kind of book it is, but I quite wanted to do something that wasn't any kind of book I've ever done before. More immediately, I've got a book coming out, which is the second Pippi Longstocking, which that's been really nice for me to revisit her as well, particularly now. It's quite nice to write about a child, illustrate a book about a child that is not at all concerned with other people's opinions of her, which is not to say she doesn't care about people. She just isn't altered by the way people talk about her or see her. And I sort of think that's a very, very important thing for children to know and understand. Because it's hard to hold on to yourself. And but I've always looked at that character in that way and thought, that must be an amazing feeling to not get too sidelined by other people and what they want to tell you are. So that's the sort of that's the world I've been living in.
Just the very last thing, you are, as we've established, adored by children all over the world. Does your daughter understand how fabulous you are?
I think you're very generous to say that. I don't know. I sort of, I never really see it like that, because I think it's more, I feel very privileged when I get letters, particularly letters. Sometimes you meet children and you have these amazing conversations, but usually it happens because they've written to you. And because I don't have email things sent to me, I have letters. So I always think, you've really gone to a lot of effort to pick up your pen and paper, find an address to send it to, bother to put things down on a piece of paper coherently and with real feeling. And it's incredibly moving. So I sort of always think what they give back is extraordinary. And sometimes I do write to them and say, you have no idea what that means to me to get your take on something that I've done. And it takes me somewhere new. So I feel it's a highly creative thing when you get these communications between someone who's made something and then someone's reaction to it and what they're telling you about themselves. And that I will take that and that becomes something else. And on it goes.
Lauren Child, many, many thanks. The Goodie by Lauren Child is published by Hachette and is available now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmercourt. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.